A Podshape production.
It was a sunny Saturday in Adelaide on the 25th of August 1973. It was getting close to footy finals time, and Les and Kathy Ratcliffe and their young son David and daughter Joanne were excited to watch their beloved Norwood on the Redlegs play.
The Rover will put it forward from centre wing towards centre half forward. Hobby in the front spot. Couldn't pull it down. Knocked on intelligently by Sorrell. Full mark for that one over the Grimwood. He's slow, the little Rover, but gets his boot in towards the goal just in time to squeak.
On the other side of town, four-year-old Kirsty Gordon was not as excited about a football game, but she was excited about being with her nan for the day, who was a Norwood fan and was planning to take her granddaughter to her fortnightly ritual at Adelaide Oval. The day started like any other, but by the time the sun went down, two families' lives were changed forever.
Well, of all the baffling crimes that have been committed in this city, few are more heartbreaking than the disappearance of Kirsty Gordon and Joanne Ratcliffe.
We're particularly looking for information concerning the happenings at the Adelaide Oval during the last quarter of the game.
This is Little Lost Girls. Episode 5, That Insignificant Little Arsehole. Susie Ratcliffe has gone through years of torment, not knowing what happened to her sister, Joanne, in 1973. A sister she never actually met. As part of her journey, Susie began a charity called Leave the Light On, whose aim is to help families of long-term missing persons. Susie believes that a missing person not only affects the immediate family, but it's generational and can affect the futures of family members. Susie inherited these qualities from her dad and her mum in their search for her sister. Mark Marshall inherited qualities from his family. Terrible, despicable qualities. Mark's grandfather was a pedophile. Mark's dad was a pedophile. And Mark is a pedophile. Mark Marshall wrote a type of confession letter while in jail a few years back. He also appeared in a royal commission and made the same claims. Susie has a copy of both his letter and his appearance in the royal commission, and she's given them to us. We also have copies of his police file. They include break and enter, exposing himself to a child, possessing child pornography, restraining orders, indecent assaults, and a list of other charges. Mark Marshall has issues that date a long way back.
I think it stems from own child abuse and sexual abuse when he was a little boy. And it's just, something like that, how does it not affect someone's mind? Police, well, they haven't taken it as gospel, his statement. A lot of it they say is just fantasy, stuff that he's made up. But with some of the details that he's claimed in that statement, it just, you can't make things like that up. It's just, yeah. And there are things that he's stated that, you know, do ring true, you know, with my family about, you know, Joanne's characteristics and what she was like.
I thought long and hard about including Mark Marshall's statement, mainly because it's disturbing and sick. We've shared some of the facts, but I think to fully understand what he is and why he came forward, they're important to share with you again. The words you'll hear are the exact words that are taken from Mark Trevor Marshall's statement to the Royal Commission on the 16th of March 2007. The voice is an actor.
I can remember one time being in nappies because I remember Dad taking me nappy off. I remember him not being rude and doing it. Like, I remember something. I remember him laughing with Uncle Johnny one day because Mum went to the shops and she said to change us, and I was probably about bigger than one. But I remember that Dad was chasing me around the backyard with the hose because he didn't want to have to wipe my bum, and he was trying to get Johnny to do it. Then one time he laid me on the table when it was getting dark, and it was sort of like dark in the kitchen, darker than it is in the daytime. And I remember Mum was in the lounge room, and Dad wouldn't let Mum open the door, and I could hear Mum saying, "Michael," or something, but Dad was, I must have been crying. Maybe that's why Mum was yelling, but all I can... The main thing I remember was Dad was, he had the beer bottle, but it felt like it was banging on my shoulder inside of me because they used to give you tunnels, but my brother had already started doing that first. The tunnels was something they used to give you, especially the girls, but they gave me one. Mum said something to me when I was little one day about tunnels, because I got very sick or something, and she said something about my poo going in my tummy, and it must have been fixed up, and I remember her belting my brother because my brother tried to give me another tunnel.
This transcript is disturbing to read and hard to hear, but as I mentioned in the earlier episode, it's critical to know what proof Bear had when he started investigating Mark Marshall's statement. Mark Marshall's accounts are very detailed, and yes, it might mean that in prison he had lots of time to read articles and different reports of the girl's disappearance, but it could also mean that he knows a lot more and could help solve this mystery for Susie and her family. In the next few pages of the transcript, Mark goes on to detail to the commissioner the actual process of tunnelling and what his father and brother would do to him and others. It's not necessary to go into that detail, suffice to say that it is shocking and depraved. On page 15 of the transcript, the commissioner asks Mark Marshall about what he knows about the girls at the Adelaide Oval.
Only about Joanne, that's all. And there was one time a girl that was wearing white that came with her. Joanne. Oh, I didn't know. People have told me what her real name is now, her last name, but I didn't know her. I just knew her as Joanne.
Did you know her other names?
Ratcliffe or something.
Do you know what happened to her?
Oh, I know that we knowed her at football and that she was come to Poppers with us, and they told me that they were going for my birthday.
Did you meet her at the football?
We knowed her before the big football, but I didn't know the other girl before the big football.
Do you know what her name is?
Something like Christy. I think that I call her Christy, but yeah, it was like Christy.
Was she younger than Joanne?
Yes, but a little bit bigger than me.
Did you follow a particular team?
The red and white. Dad's team was red and white.
North Adelaide?
Yeah, Roosters. And Joanne's team was different.
Which was that?
That was like a blue team. I think they had red.
Did you see Joanne at the big football?
Yes, but we knowed her from other footballs before
sure.
that.
Sure, but did you see her at the big football when she was with her family?
All I remember when I saw Joanne is that because usually Auntie Caroline would be carrying me or I'd be holding her hand.
So you were little, were you?
Yes, and she would say, she'd go, oh, we're going to go and see Joanne. Because they used to, Auntie Caroline would do rude things with Stephen and get Joanne to do rude things with me in the toilets.
Where?
At the football.
Was that the big football?
No, at the big football I had to be rude with another girl who was wearing white. That's the one I called Christy. I think I called her Christy. It was a name like Christy.
And she was with Joanne?
Yes. When we went to this shed thing, it was, oh, I think it had either, it was a sliding door or a noisy door, because I remember that it was, when the door closed fully, it was very dark in there. And I remember that first time, because me and the other girl were scared in there and we wanted the door open. And I remember the second time we went in there that the girl was telling me not to be scared, because I started panicking in the dark because I never used to like the dark. Then after a little while, you can see a little bit. It was scary at first, but they were saying, can you see me now? Can you see me? And they were like waving their hands so I wouldn't be scared.
And then you left the Oval?
Yes, we got in the van.
Who was with you?
Me, Mum, Stephen and Jackie went with Mum to the van. And I'm pretty sure I had to, because I remember being mad at Mum because I had like a poncho, which is red and white. And I remember Mum taking that off me. And I remember being upset. And I remember Mum telling me I was going to get it back. And I'm pretty sure that when we got to the car and Dad's dad came with Joanne and the other girl, she was wearing my poncho to the car.
Did Joanne come to the car?
Yes, we went to the car first. And then Joanne came with the other girl. She was holding her hand.
You call her Christy?
Yes, and Granddad was following him.
Your Granddad?
Dad's, yes, Dad's dad.
What's his...
But he was wearing Mum's dad's hat and jacket because we had to pinch that from Popper's house up before. But I didn't understand why.
Now, Popper is your mother's father, is that right?
Yes.
What's his name?
His name is Stan.
Stan what?
Hart.
Now, when you left the Oval, where did you go?
We went to Popper's house. First we stopped at... Can I draw it on a new page?
Yes.
We had to hide underneath the blankets in the back of Dad's van. Mum had some... two blankets. I remember one being, it was like a reddy colour with white patterns on it, and it was like wool. Like, and we had to hide underneath there, and they wasn't allowed to get out. And I remember that they kept telling the girl that they were going to my birthday, and I was excited because it was my birthday. And I remember,
was it your birthday?
I found out when we got to Poppers it wasn't my birthday. They said that. They just said that to get the girl to go there.
So you went to Yatna?
Yes, because I remember I was angry because I didn't have... When I got there, there was no cake or balloons or anything. There wasn't even no party there. But when... Before we went to... We had to hide underneath the blankets until the big road that... The same big road that we got on from the football that goes all the way up. And I remember that this is Smithfield. Because we always stop at the shop. And on this side of the road, there's like... You know, the one with the shell, yellow shell on it. And your car is parked there and you can get chips and thick shakes and that there, and petrol. And there's another one, I think, it's Ampol or something, but they're on this side of the road when you drive into Popper's house. And if you go this way, you're going back to Adelaide. Well, when Dad parked, usually we park in the car park when we go to Popper's house and we get the drinks or anything we went to go. But this time Dad went on another road and there's like a little hill thing here and there's a little road next to some houses and that's when we were allowed to get out of the van. Dad parked the van there and then he ran across the road because I remember Mum said we could get out of the car to stretch our legs and there's like a little hill thing there with, and I think there's some little trees on it, but not really bushy trees. I remember we kept running up to see if Dad was coming back over the hill. I remember Mum was telling us off to get back near the van because we was meant to be hiding. And I didn't understand why we had to.
Did Joanne get out of the van?
Yes, we all did, because Joanne was our friend then.
And was she older than you?
Yes, she was the oldest.
Did you go to sleep at the house?
Not till later. What happened was Dad put up two camping beds in there. Like, they fold up. There's legs like that, and they fold up together, and then they squeeze together, and it's like an army bed. Then when you unfold it, the legs go like that, and the bed is like that, and it's like green, and these bits are wood.
And then what happened?
There was one by the door, and one near the other side of the other one, and this is the one later on in the night, because after we had the fight with the girl, Mum took us to go, because the girls were going to sleep in here, and we was all sitting in there, and that's when they tried to give the girl in the white dress the tunnel. And that's when she had a shock, that's what Mum said. But Joanne told me later she was dead. That's when everything started getting scary. And
who gave her the tunnel?
I remember if this was the bed, the girl's head was up this end where the door is, and she was laid down there. There was Mum on this side. They was on the bed, sort of like on the bed or nearly on the bed as well. And I don't know whether they was holding her down or anything, but I remember I had to hold the leg that was on this side. And I remember laying on the leg and to stop her kicking my brother. My brother had the needle because I was only three. I guess that I was more daydreaming than paying attention to what they were doing because I didn't understand what they were doing. I just remember the only thing that comes to my mind is Mum telling me that I had to put my hand on the needle and something about my brother not having any chances left. I remember that sticks in my mind that I didn't understand a clue what it meant. And I remember how it was awkward to hold her leg down and my brother saying to my mum all the time, he's taking his hand off, he's taking his hand off. And back, I'd say it was because my brother was laying over her, it was hard for me to reach to put my hand on the needle.
So what happened to Joanne?
Later on, what happened was after the girl got taken out, I don't know where she was taken at first, I didn't find out till later, but Mum, Joanne, Caroline, these beds were taken out. We were all locked in here on like in the jail. It was Mum, Caroline, Popper had come back. Popper, Mum's dad. And I remember that Johnny was in the room with us and I remember that he was all locked in there. And that's when Mum started talking about things I had to remember and that I was going to live. That Dad was going to let me live because Dad was very angry that this girl had died. And he didn't, I thought, my impression is that he didn't get to do what he wanted to do with her before she died. And he was very angry with Mum and was basically threatening Mum's life. And also Joanne and Caroline were scared they were going to get killed.
What happened then?
We tried to run away after we was locked in. Mum got taken out and that's when my brother lifted me up. There's like a room. There's a door there. There's like another room with a fish tank in it. And this is like a filled-in veranda. And there's a bathroom there. But that wasn't really being used as a bathroom when we was there. That got changed into a bathroom later.
What happened to Joanne?
She died the next day. After that night, the girl got put in a hole by the fence. In the bag. She was in the bag. I never saw the bags that had blood on them. Was put in a hole by the fence.
And did you know, were you able to point out to anyone?
I've never known for sure where the fence was. I remember, you know, Dad's police trying to make me say, but I didn't know. I was only three. I got taken. I fell asleep on the way where we was driving to, wherever it happened. I was cuddled up to one of the girls all the time because I was that, you know, panicking. I wouldn't let Mum and Dad touch me because I was scared of them.
Now, what happened to Joanne? She died the next day?
Yeah,
Did you see her body?
Oh, I saw her when she... The last time I saw her, she was still alive because... But she was all broken. We was at Popper's house at this corner. What happened was after the other girl died, Dad went down to... Because the only phone and the power is at the post office, which is a long way down this road. And Dad went down there. I remember he walked back and he was talking to Mum about ringing his police or something. And so, and then what happened was they was having a meeting inside and we was allowed to go to sleep. I remember that in the morning we got sent to play outside and there was Dad and some people were having a meeting in there and Mum said Dad was talking with the police. We was told to play out in the back but not to go around the front, so they knew that we was there. They was having a meeting inside with Joanne. And so we played and, you know, when it's hot, you know, in winter and you get the wet on the ground, that was starting to dry. And when Joanne came out and played, so it must have been maybe about between 10 and 12 that Joanne was allowed. When Joanne came out, maybe a bit earlier. But when she came out, that's when we ran around to look through because Papa's garage is here. There's a gap here. We went to see who was coming out of the thing and there was two mans in like the black suits like Dad's police wear. So I never saw their faces. But I don't know for sure if it was Dad's police, but I just assumed that it was Dad's police that went back out and got in the car. And also Granddad took Auntie Caroline later on in the day after Joanne got hurt, because Granddad came down as well.
Why do you call them Dad's police?
Because they was always like helping Dad. That's what it seemed like.
Where did they come from, do you know?
They had a, you know, the shop with the clock at Elizabeth. They used to have a big police station there, and they had an office in that big police station.
Do you know their names?
I know them now. There's a Mr. Corley and Mr. Hudson. Like, someone showed me their photos, and I said, that's Dad's police. And they said, that's Mr. Corley and Mr. Hudson.
The information in Mark Marshall's transcript is very detailed. He remembers the team his papa went for and the team Joanne went for. He remembers the game. He recalls with exact detail what happened. And each time I read the document, I wonder if it's just the time in jail that's allowed Mark to create this story. Or is it something more sinister? Mark Marshall has never been charged with anything to do with the girl's disappearance. And his earliest recollection is of a young boy of around 3 years old. If you think back to your own earliest memories of a child, 3 years old might be a bit of a stretch. Although it is obvious that Mark Marshall's childhood was very different from yours or mine. We now move on to page 52 of the transcript. At this stage, the commissioner is around 90 minutes into Mark Marshall's statement. In front of Mark, he has some pens and a book that he's drawing diagrams. The diagrams are of the area of which Mark claims Joanne was taken and also the property which was searched. On page 49 of the document, Mark talks about that he heard two bangs, like a loud gunshot. He claims his dad and his papa had a gun and went to the room that Joanne was being kept in. Mark then told the commissioner, after two gunshots were fired, his dad stormed down the hallway, angry, and grabbed Mark and yelled, "Who shot Joanne, me or papa?" Mark suggests that his dad was saying, "Forget about what you heard and saw, and make sure you never talk about it." Mark then states that the next morning, he was in the back of a van and started to wake up and asked where Joanne was. And that's when his mum and dad, who were in the front seat, said, "Joanne who? You must have had a bad dream." In Mark's words to the commissioner, it was like Joanne never existed. Although this sounds far-fetched, you'll remember Bear mentioned in an earlier episode the prescription book that they found at the Yatna property, which was open on the page about drugging people for sleep.
There was a doctor's book in a cupboard in the lounge room, and when it was a prescription properties guide, and it kind of tells you how to use prescription drugs properly and what they're used for and rah rah rah.
Wow.
And when we opened it, the book opened to a page that, you know how a book's been opened frequently to a certain page? Well, it just opened to a page where it tells you how to use particular drugs to put somebody in a hypnotic trance.
The commissioner then asked Mark what happened to Joanne's body. Mark says that he didn't know, but he said a few days later his brother told him they got a tank his papa had near the shed. That tank, as Mark puts it, was similar to the barrels that Bear and the police found. Mark claims that his dad took him to these tanks a few days later and he saw Joanne with a bullet hole in the forehead. The following is quite gruesome. From Mark's accounts, Joanne was stuffed in the barrel.
It was like a piece of bone. Yes, it was poking out, and Dad was pushing my face against hers, saying, "Do you want to look like that? Do you want to look like that?" And I could smell her, like she smelled yucky, and she was all white like this. And that's when Dad had these bags, like they did with the other girl, and Dad started dropping her. I started screaming that much, and Dad couldn't shut me up, that Dad ended up letting me go through. I had to get my brother to help me too, so I started walking up, and he got tangled up in these, like, prickle bushes. There's all these little tunnels, because it used to be all filled with these, like, prickle bushes, so you couldn't get down to that area. You couldn't even see down there from the wall. My brother came and showed me the way back out to the wall, and then I ended up going back across to Mum. But that was after Dad started chopping her up. As far as I know, she was being chopped up and put into the tank. I remember that before they started chopping her up, you know, where the tank is, it's got like a little hole in the top. Dad put hammer holes on the opposite side of the hole. Where the hole was, he put hammer, there's like the bumpy bits, he's got like a hammer that's got an axe one side and a hammer on the other for gyprock. And he put holes in the thing so the water could go in there. And that they took, because when they pulled Joanna in there was these things on her, little black things. And they thought they were crabs because they had claws, but now I know that they're yabbies. But that's what made the hole in her face.
We have to let these people take you back, so I've just got a few other questions. Have you told police about what happened?
The police already, they knowed when I was little. I don't know if someone's been up there, because when I got taken, just before I came to jail, the end of the tank had been cut off, like, so. Now the tank is one big hole.
You got taken by who?
That was Mr. Weeding and another man.
Did you tell them about it?
They already knew about it. I didn't have to tell them about it. They were like telling me not to tell anyone else. That's what it seemed to me.
When you went up there with the police, did you find the tank?
Yes, the tank was still there.
Did you find Joanne?
No, they took her out when I was about 7. They took her out of the tank, the bones out of the tank.
Who took her out?
Dad, brother Alan, Ruskin.
Do you know what they did with them?
No, I was never allowed to know where they put her bones. But I do remember that my brother and me, when I was little, there was something in the fire at Popper's. Popper's got a place where, you know, you used to have Guy Fawkes Night. And I remember that near Popper's woodpile, where they had Guy Fawkes Night, that I remember having to sit there with Dad's sledgehammer and break things. And maybe I was, if I remember, that they may have even been the teeth of something, and we had to break them in little tiny pieces.
Mark Marshall's statement to the commissioner is over 80 pages long. We heard from Susie that it was a very difficult read, given its graphic nature. and how this was not just a body in a barrel, it may have been her big sister. You also must remember that police labelled this account a fantasy.
Oh, the police said it was all fantasy and fiction, and none of it existed. And I said, well, we've actually found the place, and we've been up there, and we've been out there too. They said, there's nothing there.
But Bear, the private investigator, thinks differently. Either way, this account from Mark Marshall was the starting point for Bear and his team to start their search and also give Susie and her family a little bit of hope.
Yeah, he describes the place quite well in his little mud map that he drew up, and we actually initially searched for the... We went and bought maps and that and started searching for the town, and we couldn't find the town on a map. And then I went on to Google and actually found the town. And as we moved down the street on the Google map, I saw the pine trees that he'd drawn on the map, and all the hair stood up on my neck. And I thought, oh my God, this place does exist. And that was the most horrifying thing of all. Like, after I'd read the statement, I found out that the place actually existed.
In the next episode of Little Lost Girls, Susie talks about her feelings on the police investigation.
It was only if they'd suddenly got information, or the papers or the TV were going to come out with something, that they'd ring Mum and go, "Oh, this is coming out, or this has happened. Be prepared."
Yeah.
And then in later years, they didn't even do that.
A new DNA test that might help solve this mystery.
With 500 different sets of remains being in those morgues, that means that there's over 500 families around Australia that could finally have answers. And if we can raise that awareness about their missing loved one and reach that person that might have a piece of that puzzle.
And Susie's tragedy of losing a sister and how that inspires her every day to help others.
It's all worth it. And that's what I strive for. It's heartbreaking to know that we might not ever locate the girls. But in so saying that, I'm not going to give up hope. Hope is all we have. And if I give that up, then we've got nothing.
There are over 38,000 long-term missing person cases in Australia, and the story you've just heard is one of them. We want to continue to help bring these emotional stories of ambiguous loss to you so we can spread the word and hopefully get some closure for the families. For as little as the price of a coffee a month, you can help support us to keep creating this content. Just head to our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes.